This is a London Undone podcast. My name is Catherine Cartwright. These podcasts give you an audible insight into some curious places around London. This series focuses on the historic and at times peculiar City of London churches, their histories, features, associations, and their spiritual lives. May I ask you what your name is and what your connection is with the city churches?
Susan Conowich, and my connection is that I'm a friend of the city churches, and among the ranks of the friends of the city churches there are people called church watchers, and I'm one of those.
So do you mind telling me what the name of the church is we're sitting in and how it gets its name?
It's called St James Garlic Hive. Garlic Hive because the original church would have been very close to the river, and it would have indeed have been a hive, a dock, where they brought in garlic, among other things. One of the other things they brought in a lot of was wines, which is why the Vintners' Hall is opposite here, and the Vintners use this church as their local church.
So my name is Father Tim Handley, and we are stood in the nave of St James Garlic Hive Church. This is the church of which I am the priest in charge. I've been a priest for over 20 years, but I've been here for just a year and a half now. I'm still the baby in the city.
Given that it wasn't too long ago, what were your first impressions of the church?
It's big. I'm told that it's got the tallest ceiling, highest ceiling, of any church in the city. So when you walk in, you get an immediate sense of, wow, that is a big, big space. But it's actually not so big that it lacks intimacy.
Yeah, the ceiling at 40 feet is the highest in the city, yeah. So it is a very high structure. From outside it's very nondescript, but inside, as with so many city churches, it is gorgeous. And a lot of light does stream in, even though it's one side solid wall, but you do have the high up windows.
Yeah, but the central, is that a rose window?
Yeah.
Circular window,
yeah.
Rose window. Either side.
That was stained glass, but is no longer, as you can see. And there was a sort of fortuitous accident with crane, which fell across the road, flat bang through the middle of that window, took out the rest of the stained glass, took out half of the roof, so new ceiling.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Took out the chandelier, unfortunately, which has been beautifully replaced. That's by the glass sellers. Took out the pews, so these are modern pews.
So that was a serious accident.
Absolutely.
What, the crane fell into the church?
The arm of one of those great tall cranes.
When was
building
that?
On the other
Do we
side.
Know?
1991. The wood in the pews came from trees that fell during the great storm, which was 87, wasn't
yeah.
it? Yeah. But around the edges, you still have beautiful carved woodwork dating from the original Wren church. So 17th century woodwork.
Was the church badly damaged in the Second World War?
No, bomb dropped not on the church but nearby, and so it could have damaged that corner. Until the crane dropped, it was actually quite an original Wren church.
Coming into this church, there's a lot to see. Can you pick out a few key things that you think are important?
Well, it has a lovely pulpit with the tester still, the sounding board over it attached to the pillar. And there is a little wig peg where the preacher would put his wig during services, whether it's because it got overheated or whether it was the tradition to sort of uncover your head and the wig counted as a cover, the same as a hat. I'm never quite sure.
Pick a feature in the church that you think is worth sharing with listeners.
Well, even though you can't see it, it would probably be the altar table, because that's original, i.e. it was built for this church by Christopher Wren's design and so on and so forth. So that's been here since 1683, and it's survived wars, Death Watch Beetle, and various other bits, and it's still there, it's still being used, and is the focus and centre of our worship still.
One of the features of the outside is a rather nice tower. And this one, the one next along, which is Paternoster Royal. And Stephen Walbrook, they're quite elaborate, but they do look slightly the same.
They are the distinctive Wren tower top.
This is about the last one that he did. He was kind of running out of ideas. So they look rather similar.
We do? And we heard the bell going a second ago.
That's the clock, yeah. Over the door, there is a clock with a St James on the top of it. Actually, the original of that was destroyed in the war. That's one of the casualties of the war. So that is a replacement. But they did replace it with a copy, as it were.
And
the bells here.
The bells.
The bells, the bells.
Yes, we didn't have a ring of bells. We just had one until the Jubilee. And there was a move to collect for a peal of bells.
So I'm Dickon Love, and I'm captain of the bell ringers here.
And the bells here are special, are they not?
They are indeed. So prior to them coming here, we used them on the River Thames to be part of the Thames Diamond Jubilee pageant that you might have seen on television, that was watched by millions and billions around the world. And these are the eight bells that were given a royal title from Buckingham Palace, so they're known as the Royal Jubilee Bells, and they were used on the front barge of the pageant on that day in June. So there are a few things special about them. First of all, they were cast at Whitechapel, the Whitechapel Bell Foundry, which is now sadly no longer. They were cast to a new profile, new shape, if you like, that had only been released a year early, that their chief bell designer had produced. So the bells here sound slightly different from Whitechapel bells elsewhere. They have a very subtly different sound. They sound, in my view, somewhat deeper than you would have expected from a bell for that weight. And then the other thing is, of course, two of the bells, the biggest two, were recast from the metal from the bells of St Mary at Hill that had been at the Whitechapel Bell Foundry since 1988. There was a fire in that church. The bells had been taken for storage. The church didn't want them anymore, so they were scrapped. And the bell metal from those bells ended up as the two largest bells here. And then the last thing is the Royal Jubilee bells all have names. So each was named after a member of the royal family.
Right.
So the largest one is named Elizabeth. But going around, it's Elizabeth, and the next largest is Philip. And you can probably guess where we're going here. Then we have Charles, Anne, Andrew, Edward, William, and the smallest bell is called Henry. Shortly after the bells went in, I started a local band, so started teaching a group of people with some help from others. And we now have a very thriving, exciting, keen, enthusiastic local band, and they come along every Thursday evening. Our youngest ringer is age 12. Our oldest ringer, well, he's in his mid-90s, but he's not been able to climb the tower for about 5 years. So these bells are very much in demand. Everybody wants to come and ring on the Royal Jubilee bells. We have visiting bands of ringers, so we do accommodate that.
Should we go up?
Yes.
Is that
yes,
all right?
Come and meet them.
Great, thank you.
Oh, it's clean.
Yes, I've got here a bit early and...
Hoover.
No, crikey, it needed it.
I'm Ed Mallon and I ring in Yorkshire. So my hometown is Howth, which the bells there were rung for one of the Bronte sisters' weddings, I believe. The self-same bells. That's my home.
So you're chasing famous bells.
Yes,
come down to London.
And these are famous, I understand. So it's a great privilege to come and ring these tonight.
Tell me about what's led you to follow this.
Well,
hobby.
Really, it was the Ringing Remembers campaign that was launched to honour the people that were killed in the First World War. There were 1,700 ringers killed in the First World War, and that really inspired me to come and ring because my grandfather was in the First World War. It's a fabulous hobby because it takes your mind off the stress of the day. It's great.
And you're visiting this tower, so this will be new for you.
For me.
What are you expecting to feel or hear when you...
Every bell is a little bit different, so the more bells you ring, the better you become, hopefully. But it's going to be good to ring these and see how they sound and how they feel.
Are you ready? Here's trouble.
In terms of your congregation, what are they like? Who are they?
They sort of come from all over the place. It's a very small parish, not many people live here, so you get the occasional resident, but you get people from outside the city, so you've got a couple of people who live in East London, they come in, and then other people come from miles away, you know, Hertfordshire, Essex.
And when you say people come in, you're talking about people coming in for Sunday worship, so you're a parish church?
Yep, we're a parish church. As I said, not many people live here, we're talking about 300, but every day... something like 10,000 people pour in, do their work, and then disappear off again. So, and I always think that I actually have three parishes. I have my Sunday parish, I have my livery company parish, and then the other bit is the workers, and for them we provide 3 services a day. So we serve lots of people. And the great thing about this church, what makes it unique, is that it still uses the Book of Common Prayer exclusively, and also our music is pretty much 95% drawn from the English choral tradition. So in other words, for me, it's kind of the best of English churchmanship. I mean, there's not many places, 2 or 3 possibly, where you get the prayer book used every Sunday.
But was that your decision to do that? Was that already existent here?
No, it was already here when I got here, and it had a long tradition of that. I mean, the interesting thing about this church, so the Book of Common Prayer was, as we have it now, was completed in 1662. This church was destroyed in 1666, rebuilt in the 1680s, finished in 1683. This church has known no other prayer book than the Book of Common Prayer. So, again, that makes it quite unique.
The bit we haven't covered is the bit where we've got the effigy of Jimmy Garlick, the corpse in the coffin still.
Oh, tell me about that.
Yes, they found this... it's not an effigy, it's actually a body, a sort of mummified body, which they've done various tests on. It is a mummified body, and they don't know who he was. He's always been here. He used to be sort of a Victorian object of curiosity. You could come and see him. He used to be in a cupboard in the narthex, apparently. But when they were redoing the bell loft to hang the bells, restoring all that, he did get moved up. You used to be able to go up into the tower. You can't do that anymore, but he's up there now, apparently, in a nice modern coffin. But he's still here, yeah, the mummified body. You used to be able to just wander in from behind the organ, but it's now...
How creepy. Sort of creepy.
Mm, very.
That was not what I was expecting to hear. I had no idea yes, about the mummified body that's been hanging around yeah. here for so long.
So he is still here. There's a body up there, yeah.
And is there anything else that we've missed?
Oh, the other thing of interest is, you remember the Marchioness disaster, the boat that
yeah.
sank? And so a lot of the bodies were brought here.
Oh, really?
And in fact, the little tables, the little semicircular tables beside the altar.
Should we go and have a look?
They are made from wood from the Marchioness. Yes, these little semicircular ones, again, are modern.
At the back?
Yeah.
So the bodies were brought here?
Some of the bodies were brought here because they were recovered from the river. I mean, the river is just behind Vintners
yeah.
Hall there.
Oh, that's terrible.
And it was
sad.
It was between Blackfriars and
oh, how awful. Suffolk,
wasn't it? So,
and so yeah. those tables are built from some of the wood from the ship?
Hmm.
Or the boat. Oh, that was such a sad thing.
It was terrible, wasn't it?
And I've just noticed here, just as we're standing here, I'm just scanning what's in front of me, and it says that here, something about pilgrimages. Obviously, people
yes,
go on pilgrimage.
Yes, we are the first stage, or can be the first stage, on the trail to St. Iago de Compostela.
So people going on pilgrimage to
Santiago... They can come because they get their cards or the programme marked along the way. So this they could start here. So if you were starting from England or from London, you could come in here and get this would be your first mark. So this would be the start of your pilgrimage.
I love that there's a book, a little stamp book involved.
Yeah.
And although I'm not going to Santiago de Compostela, I do feel like I'm on a pilgrimage of my own, going through all of the City of London churches. So I decided to get myself a stamp before I move on to my next church.